This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Rita Liu. It's Tech Talk, and after a hiatus, not coming on air, Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia joins us again today. So welcome back, and good to see you.
Thanks. Feels like my first time. Every time I miss two shows in a row, you know.
Three,
yeah? Or somebody's counting, yeah? Yeah, I do get butterflies in the stomach, man. And it doesn't help that you're always giving me a hard time even before the show. You know, when my mic is not on, that's unfair advantage, okay?
Okay, that's because you arrive in the nick of time. So anyway, I understand that the Malaysian entrepreneurs will get a boost with the launch of the Angel Tax Incentive by Cradle Fund. What's the story there?
I guess it's got me really excited because I think I can make the claim that this is the first time in the history of this country that the government is actually going to put money back into your pockets if you first fork it out, you know, and try to invest in it in a risky venture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do anything else, you open up a restaurant, you know, you want to build a toll road in Myanmar or whatever, it's entirely your risk, right?
Yeah.
But here, for the first time, the government is saying, if you do this, and this meaning, you know, you become an angel investor, and specifically in technology companies, you know, in the third year of the point that you have given them money, which is cash, it's no in kind, we will then allow you to have a tax exempt of that amount of money you've invested. And here's the incredible thing, right? Even if the company you've invested in is about ready to become the next MOL of Southeast Asia or the world, and it's successful, right? You will still get the money back, you know, as in a tax exempt form.
Right.
Which is quite astounding when you think about it.
Okay, so...
And the reason why they're doing this, right? Yeah, because the government has been saying for a few years now, it's various agencies that fund companies in the startup space, in technology space, not just startups, right? That we're going to start withdrawing now. It's time for the market to take over.
Hmm.
And the market, especially at the angel level, has been very reluctant. And this is just a huge catalyst, you know, by the government saying that now there are no excuses, you know, this is what we're going to do for you. Instead of you, you know, paying taxes to the government, you know, we will offset the risk that you've taken, you know. And there's no risk, right? Like I said, even if your startup, the company you've invested in succeeds, you're still going to get your money back.
Okay. What are the conditions and criteria?
Yeah, yeah. So, of course, when you have something like this, you got to be careful, right? Because Malaysians are not, if not creative, in finding the lubang, right? The all infamous lubang or jalan. Yes.
And the cable.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, no, I mean, you actually have to go through an accreditation process, right? So, of course, there's some financial criteria, which is that you have to be a tax resident in Malaysia. And that's really good because it's not just limited to Malaysians then. Because just a day before yesterday, I found out that the CEO of one of the insurance companies in Malaysia, you know, earns an insane amount of money every month, you know. So he's obviously eligible now. So you got to be a tax resident in Malaysia, high net individual or high income earner, right? So it means somebody who's got a personal net assets of 3 million and above. And also, if you're a high income earner, wage earner, it has to be that your gross annual income a year is not less than 180,000, which is 15,000 ringgit a month, which is probably around what you're making. So you're going to be an angel investor too, Frida. And you can, or if you combine jointly with your spouse, then it's 250,000 annual income.
Okay, so anyone who meets a financial threshold can become an angel.
No. Because that's one of the loopholes too, right? So obviously, if you're going to be investing in a relative, a family member, they don't count that. And actually, if you really dwell into that, there's no reason for that not to happen. But I think they just want to, you know, keep that door closed for now. Because one of the things that Nazrin Hassan, the CEO of Cradle Fund, Sendirian Berhad, said was that this is a prototype. The version of the tax incentive that is out there now, just consider it like a prototype. And you will refine it as you go along, which means that you'll make adjustments, right, based on market feedback.
Mm.
He's already had a lot of feedback from angel investors. I've had feedback from one or two investors too. So he will refine that. But for this version one, if you're you cannot invest in a relative and all. So that's one of the loopholes. And then also, if you qualify financially, then you got to actually go through the Malaysian Business Angels Network, which is like a trade association, and you'll actually have classes. They'll actually educate you on what it means to be an angel investor, how to look for technology companies, because there's a criteria, right? One of the criteria is that there are seven areas, I think, they're looking at, which is actually eight here, which is advanced electronics and information technology. You've got transportation. you know, electro-optics, you know, non-linear optics, and even emerging technologies, which actually then makes it quite wide.
Yeah.
But it's really sticking in the technology space.
Everything can be emerging.
Yeah, and you've not the one that is wide is value-added services. So that's interesting. But really, they've defined some areas and telecommunications.
Okay.
So you got to fit in there. So they'll probably educate you about what are the trends in this space, or just what are the basic things to look out for. And you'll get other angel investors who've succeeded, who've not succeeded, to share their experience with them, so that you at least go in with your eyes open. Because there is obviously a risk still. So you have to go through that. Then you get like an accreditation to say that you are an accredited angel investor. Only with that accreditation, Frida, can you then in year three go to the Lembaga Hasil Dalam Negeri and say, yeah, year three. When if 2 full years has gone by, then you can invest and then you can get a tax exemption,
right,
which is awesome.
So on a personal level, will this benefit DNA? Because value added, ma.
Oh, okay. That's very sharp of you to pick out. I don't know, but I mean, we may explore. I mean, when I first heard about it last year, I got really excited. I said, wow, even we can apply. And our angel, if we look for angels subsequently this year, you know, it's great. That's a great backstop for them because there's really no risk, you know. There's, of course, the time cost of that money. If we fail and explode and go up in a blaze of flames, right, whatever, you know, amount you've given us is gone. But then you wait 2 years before you can reclaim that back. But it's still good. It's all good. I mean, there's just a lot to be excited about if you're a technopreneur, you know, in Malaysia. It will definitely be a lot easier. And actually, I text a high net worth individual who's in a tech company last night, and I asked him if this would make you more open to being an angel investor. And he texts back this morning, just three sentences, you know, three lines, three words. Of course it would. Sorry, that's four words. Of course it would. Then I call him and had a conversation with him. But he brought up an interesting point, right? He said that for somebody like him who's very savvy in the space, you know, if this accreditation program is too long, it would put him off, right? Because like if you're really in the space already, do you want to go through a week's program?
Exactly.
I'm sure there's a certain number of days, but I didn't find that out in time for the show. So he's asking if people like him can get an exemption, you know, so they don't have to attend the full, whatever, so it's 2 days or 3 days or 1 week thing.
It's like, you know, like how you go for this program, you say, but I already have a diploma, so I don't have, you know what I mean?
Exemptions,
unless you're first time.
Yeah.
And if there are exemptions, what are the exemptions?
Yes.
I think maybe that'd be
maybe
the best.
That'll be,
because
I guess,
otherwise
version
turn,
two. Yeah.
Turn people, some people
some
off.
Some people away. But I told him people like him are in the 0.01% of investors, right? And that's
so
why the threshold.
So let's give them some exemptions.
Yeah. Maybe we'll see. It's up to credit. I mean, they got to give feedback to Nazrin and the team at Credo. But it's really, at the moment, it looks all good. Of course, I spoke to one tax consultant who said that what would be even better for this version now, or actually not this version, it's already there, is that, you know, you have a cap or a maximum of 500,000, and that's every year, right? So every year you could literally, Frida, make an investment in, you actually not every year, even this year, like you could make an investment in 3 companies, $500,000 each. It just means that when you're eligible, you just, you know, offset 1 year first. You know, year three, you take 1 company, and then year four, the second company you invested in. So it's really limitless. Your exemption is there, and it's great.
Now I know what to do with my millions.
Now you know what to do with your money. Yeah, don't say millions, with your spare cash. But the good thing is, right, that's why the threshold is low, and the minimum investment is just 5,000. And the idea of this is that you and a group of friends who qualify at that 180,000 threshold can pool your resources and expertise, right? Because as angel investors, you don't just give money. Yeah. Like there was a panel session at the end of the event, during the event to announce the official launching on day before yesterday. And one of the entrepreneurs said that they went in, they didn't know a lot of things, but the angel investor just linked this up with, you know, created a lot of networks for them. So you've got, you know, if you and five of your friends pull together, one guy is great in marketing, one guy is a techie, one guy is good in overseas markets, right? He's got a network overseas. You form together, guys, let's just put 10,000. Yeah, of course. Yeah, you can. So that's really interesting, right? So it's strength in numbers, right? And you all learn from each other, and it'll be a group. It'll be something that even bonds the group together. Then we're investing in 1 or 2 companies, and you can diversify, right? You don't just invest in one company. Each of y'all can put in 15,000 or 25,000, right? And you can make a few investments.
And how long do you think before we'll see a solid group of angel investors?
I would have thought it would be a lot sooner, but I think Nazrin was really smart to say at the media conference that he thinks it'll be between 5 to 7 years before you have this critical mass appear.
Okay.
And what is this critical mass? It's the first cohort of angel investors, right, have a good experience. And that's why the high net worth individual who called me this morning from the tech company says, why do you want this accreditation? Or the inherent thing about investing is the risk, right? It's always going to be there. I said, yes, but I agree with Cradle, because if you don't have this education process and help people understand what it means to be an angel, and if the first batch who jump in all fail or most of them fail, what are they going to talk about when they meet their friends at reunions and teh tarik sessions and all that, right? They're going to say, oh man, I had a bad experience and this and that, because they went in with their eyes closed. So this accreditation, which comes with education, is very important, I think.
Speaking of which, we'll be discussing education after this.
Oh, yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
Karamjit Singh, Digital News Asia, Tech Talk, BFM 89.9.
I believe that laughing is the best calorie burner. I believe that happy girls are the prettiest girls. I believe that tomorrow is another day, and I believe in miracles. Audrey Hepburn.
Our chief want is someone who will inspire us to be what we know we could be. Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Live as if you were to die tomorrow. Learn as if you were to live forever. Mahatma Gandhi.
We all need our dose of inspiration every day. Join me, Meera Sivasuthi, as I speak to people from all walks of life about various issues, only on The Bigger Picture weekdays at 3 p.m.
Bemused football managers, BFM 89.9.
It's Tech Talk. Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia. Early on, we were discussing the Angel Tax Incentive by Cradle Fund, which has been recently launched. And we're moving on to education. This is just an ever-present topic, something you love to talk about. Why do you feel compelled to bring it up again?
Yeah, I think because obviously when you become a business owner and you look to hire people, you obviously want to hire top quality talent, right? And a lot of that has to do with the grooming and the shaping, the molding they've had in the education system. So you take an even higher interest than beyond just your own kids are going through the system. And I brought this up because the guys from Teach for Malaysia, right? Just an awesome organization that's trying to make a difference, right? They wrote an article on DNA about how our nation's aspirations to be a high income nation are just at odds with, you know, the reality of what's going on in Malaysian schools. And the article was really superbly written, but it was also very chilling to me because it gives you a eyes view of what's going on the ground. And it just scared me as a Malaysian because, you know, we're all in Team Malaysia, right? And you know, the stronger the team, the better for us, the greater you feel, right? So it just feels like the fresh talent that's coming into Team Malaysia is nowhere near as strong as it can be. And even aside from talking about the quality of the education curriculum, it's just that there's this chasm there, and it's an economic chasm, you know, which these guys talk about. They gave the example of one of their teachers who's teaching in a school in Banting. And this lady, Cegu Hawa Othman, is teaching in one of the worst classes, and the students are naughty, are distracted, and they're not interested in education, you know, just the worst of three combinations. But in this class, two students stand out and they actually have an interest to learn math and science. So Cegu Hawa has been putting some effort into them. And lo and behold, one day, you know, they say that at the midterm, you know, they're going to drop out of school at age 16. Why? Because they have to help their parents, you know, earn a living. So, and that's really tragic because, you know, that's the future talent pool of this country, right? And they're going to deprive themselves of an education because they need to go out and make a living. And of what are the chances of them becoming the next Tony Fernandez or the dropouts you hear in the US, right? Those are college dropouts, right? This is just in middle school.
Right.
So it was, and they just wrote about how our drive, you know, towards become a high income nation sits really uncomfortably beside the reality of struggling classes like this class, right? And it reflects in our poor standings in these international student assessments. We've spoken about Program for International Student Assessment, PISA, and these trends in international mathematics and science study. And what was shocking to me was that, which Teach for Malaysia pointed out, was that not only did our students fare below average, right, for both maths and science, but the results in the 2011 study for this TIMSS, right, this Trends in International Math, is that Malaysia demonstrated the largest drop in scores, right, among all the other participating countries between 1999 and 2011. And Frida, I'm not joking, I read that sentence and I literally froze, you know, because I said, good God, man, what is happening in our country, you know? Absolutely, we cannot allow this to happen. And it is. And they, what they spoke of, and the thing is, this is this fact is also realized by the government. You know, you've got this national education blueprint, And it says that the largest achievement gaps in Malaysia are still driven by socioeconomic status, you know. Okay. So, and education inequality is the real and mounting problem in this country. So, despite they talk about measures to alleviate it, but a child's background is still the principal factor, you know, of the quality of education he or she will receive. And that really saddened me because I know we need to do something, right? And then what happened is that Cikgu Hawa, all of you out there, you should really read this article. Mm. And just close your eyes then and reflect for 2-3 minutes, you know, about what can you do, you know, to help alleviate this. Because it's no laughing matter. It strikes at the core of Malaysia being a country, right? Mm. And then Cikgu Hawa took the students on a field trip to College Yayasan, which is a college, you know, that preps Malaysian students who are going to study abroad. And she insisted that both these female students also come along because they had earned the trip with all their hard work because she had given them extra work to do.
Right.
And she wanted them to get a feel for the outside world, you know, outside their comfort zone. And so they went, and apparently these girls were blown away by the campus, the students, the teachers they met, and the lessons they learned there for that day. And then Cikgu Hawa asked them, you know, do you still want to drop out of school? They said, no, you know, we want to see the world. We want to be everything we can. We want to see the world. Isn't that incredible? Just one trip. Because they've seen outside of their cocoon, right?
Yeah.
Which is in Banting. And, you know, they've never been out of Banting before.
Right.
So, and that's why Teach for Malaysia said that with hard work and incredible amount of guidance and support, all students, like, you know, these two girls can do and be anything they want. And can you imagine, Frida, if these two girls can achieve their dreams of being an engineer, an ICT specialist, astronaut, or even an awesome radio engineer, then Malaysia too can do more than just dream about, you know, being a high aspiration nation.
They've seen beyond their temperung.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. Okay, now we now have our own version of the Khan Academy.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that was quite interesting because the next day after that, there was an article on EduNation, right? Which aspires for free tuition for every Malaysian child powered by you and me. So a lot of us know about the Khan Academy, right? Mm-hmm. And like even for my kids, when they're on computers, they're always on YouTube a lot, right? And this annoying, you know, laughing orange or whatever. You know,
annoying orange. Oh,
annoying
no.
Orange, yeah. Okay, man. Jeez. Yeah, I know. And so I tell my son, you know, hey, you got to spend 30 minutes at least on Khan Academy, you know, for every 2 hours or 3 hours that you're watching all this endless, you know, YouTube videos, you know, which don't help you one iota. So these guys have been inspired. And one of them, one of the founders is, let me see, what's his name? Edmund Yap, right?
Mm-hmm.
He founded it. And the catalyst for him was that he was volunteering as a teacher, giving tuition to classes for orphanages, right? And he came across this 15-year-old boy who did not know how to add half and half. And Yap said he actually felt annoyed that nobody had bothered to teach him something so basic as this in his 9 years of schooling. So he wanted to do something, but it was only a few years later that he stumbled across the Khan Academy. And he said, oh my God, the internet is the great leveler, right? And so now what they're doing is they're translating, they're taking lessons in Malaysian textbooks, right? And putting them in video form and getting volunteers to be the teachers to translate that and do some teaching so that becomes like an online tuition for people. So it's great that they've already got a corporate sponsor Brickfields Asia College, $500,000. So they're off to a running start. They've had like 200 volunteers. No, they've had 250 video lessons already, you know, covering math, biology, chemistry, you know, and science online. And they want to do a lot more. They're looking for more volunteers too. Okay. So it's really heartening to see that these guys are making that effort, right? So you've got Teach for Malaysia, which is doing an amazing job. Now you've got EduNation promising, you know, free tuition. So it's great because, again, here they mentioned the parents whose kids can afford it, right, will send their kids for tuition, whereas the rest don't. And I'll share with you a chilling story.
Why do we need tuition?
Yes.
Why do we need tuition in the first
place? I know. It's just a cancerous growth, right, in our education. So it's there because of parents' perception that you need to focus on getting A's, you know, and maybe worried about the classes are too big, teachers are not good enough. It's just a whole gamut of things. But just listen to this anecdote. Somebody from one of the largest GLCs, they sponsor some schools up in the north. And this person who was the head of comms went to see one of the schools once because you want to go on the ground and see how your money is being used. And the teacher then told her that a lot of the students, you know, when they wake up in the morning, they have to get ready themselves to come to school because their parents are already off to Penang working in the factories, right? Because if you're starting the 8 o'clock shift, you're out of the house by 6 a.m. or something. So the students get up on their own and they're lucky if there's a slice of bread, you know, with some butter and jam for them or butter on the table for them. A lot of them come to school hungry, you know. And this is not even like a rural area. And it was just shocked. And she was shocked to hear that, you know. And this is actually in Bukit Mertajam, a school in Bukit Mertajam. And then what happened was that sometimes in school, what happens if the students ask a lot of questions, the teachers will give the students a note, you know. Not all, but I'm told teachers will give the students a note to go back to take to their parents. And the note says that your child
is disruptive.
Your child is weak in his lessons. They need tuition.
And who will teach the tuition?
Exactly. And you think the parent can afford that? What's the parent going to say? Give the child a slap and say, go to the back of class and never ask a question again in class. Can you imagine how I heard that and I said, oh, goodness gracious me, man. Not in my Malaysia, you know. That was just horrible. It just reminded me of that anecdote. So that's why it's just so many people who cannot afford it, right? We think a lot of people are going for tuition. Almost everyone's getting tuition. No, only those who can afford it, right?
Right.
So the gap becomes even bigger and it just dovetails with what Teach for Malaysia is saying in that article.
Okay. And, you know, you had a columnist writing about computer science education in the country.
Yeah. Dr. Sean Tan, excellent first article on, he was making the point that there were too many computer science programs in the country at the university level and college level. And then in this second part of this article, he was saying that he shared that article with some of the heads of the deans, you know, for these programs. And one of them said that he expressed reservation for Dr. Tan in labeling, you know, them that there were many bad computer science programs in Malaysia because he said they're all accredited by the Malaysian Qualifications Agency. And therefore, none of them are bad per se. But Sean says, I humbly, you know, disagree. And he goes on to talk about why. And he went through a number of documents, right, that go into this process of how you as a university or a college can get your programs accredited. And he said, taken together, right, all these documents form a template for running quality academic programs, but for one minor detail. This program, they're treating this education system as this accreditation process. It treats the process of tertiary education as a production process for manufacturing graduates, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, a template. And he says that that's not how you get quality out of the program. And he said that there's only one of the curriculums is concerned. One of the program qualities, there are nine of them, is only one is concerned with curriculum.
Mm.
And he says in the IT space, curriculum changes so fast, right? So he's really concerned about that. He shared a lot of things and even suggested a way out of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he called it a silly idea, but he said that instead of fixing curriculum and shoving it down students' collective throats, let's try to turn our universities and colleges into places where students can actually directly take part in this continuous evolution, right, of the syllabus. See, important, right, continuous evolution of the syllabus and have some freedom to tailor their learning based on individual needs. Now, this is a big statement. And of course, I said, but Malaysian students, up to then, right, before university, you're almost spoon-fed, right?
Yeah.
Although now the education system has changed in form one onwards, right? You're giving them more self-learning, right? It has started now. But you still got many students coming out with that. Tell me what to do. You need to tell me what to do, what to read, what to memorize.
And what I like about this guy is that when he wrote this, you know, he talked about the issue and he gave a solution.
And he really delved into he went through all the PDS for, you know, the code of practice for institutional audit, which I've never heard of before, program standards for computing, you know. So he's done stuff, you know. It's very interesting. And he himself has got a doctorate and now he's starting to be a lawyer and he quotes and on the spare time. So he's got the full package. So he speaks from a point of credibility, not a lot of us like armchair critics, right?
Mm.
So his two articles were really just so interesting. It just dovetailed, right? This last week, three articles on education. Teach for Malaysia and Teach for Malaysia has been so well read on our portal too. So it's just because people are afraid. And they've really hit a raw nerve there. But now we've got to do something about it, right? And not just keep talking about it.
Right. And on that note, Karimjit Singh from Digital News Asia. Maybe he'll be back again next week.
Next week, maybe. Long live the tech ecosystem.
BFM.
Zindabad.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.